Yo, what up, Street Talks? Here, Kim. All right, Turbo Thoughts. So, this one is about courage. So, what is courage? Courage comes from the heart. I mean, it's my personal belief that everything in life is all about courage. And even in ancient Greek times, one's virtuosity, you know, virtue, virtues, being a man, whatever, being a magnanimous human being, is all about courage. Courage to dictate one's inner thoughts at the risk of punishment, shame, etc. Courage to act or behave or live in a certain way, no shirt on. Having the courage to potentially be ridiculed. So even one of my favorite Kanye lines, right? It's like, with my ego, I could show up in Speedo and look like a fucking hero, right? And so it's pretty interesting. Like, even basic thing, right? Abraham, I really think it's the most superior, like, sounds so silly, right? If you want to be more creative, buy an iPad Pro, and get some Vibram Five Fingers, go topless and walk around the mountains. It's an Eric Kim simple creativity solution, and no stupid case, no stupid pencil. Pencil is just a glorified stylus, right? The Apple stylus. And I like this idea, the rare for the rare. So even this is also the nice thing too, is like, since I'm American, Korean American, being here in Seoul, South Korea / Hadong, South Korea, I want to have the courage to act in certain ways where people look at me like I'm a barbarian or some sort of savage or foreigner. And actually, that's the funny upside, is being a foreigner, no, being of a different nation, and it being a different nation, why is it that everyone's always trying to fit in? Shouldn't it be to maximally stick out? And this is where Koreans are so superficially contradictory, is that like, oh, you don't want people to look at you weird or whatever, right? Or you want to be looked at, right? Yet all the Koreans want to get the Rolls Royce, the Lamborghini, etc. Yet, you know, in Seoul, South Korea, there's no law saying that you can't walk around with a t-shirt. But Koreans don't do that because, you know, A, most Koreans are fat, and B, they're afraid of being ridiculed. But it's hilarious because people's outer appearances, outer thoughts, and their inner thoughts are actually quite at odds. Like, I was in the subway in Seoul, and I saw some youngish Korean dude watching, like, the super buff Seoul ass Korean doing heavy squats on YouTube, and, you know, topless. And so, and Koreans also love Korean dramas and TV shows. So the Korean fantasy of acting a certain way is romanticized, yet in practicality, in practical reality, it is seen with, like, fear, disdain, or confusion. And even one of the, I was born in the States. I actually studied Korean as a minor when I was at UCLA as an undergrad. Shout out to my sensei name, Jane. He's the best. And the hilarity is, I really wanted to improve my Korean so much to prevent myself from being in shameful situations where I just don't understand other people. And actually, even one of my, it wasn't my blood harabaji, but like my wei harabaji, is my mom's dad's my non-paternal grandfather's, I think it was like one of his brothers or something like that. Or it might have been my, actually no, I think it was my my chin harabaji's brother. So my dad's brother, who said to me, he's like, "야, 상진아, 네 한국 사람인데 한국 사람 할 줄 모르면 한국 사람 아니다." Which is like, Eric, if you're Korean, but you don't know how to speak Korean, you're not Korean. And it was so full of shame. And as a consequence, I told my mom, I was like, oh, 엄마, don't feed me food unless you speak to me only in Korean. And then I respond only in Korean. This is actually the problem that a lot of Korean Americans, like my generation, born 1988, is our parents immigrated to America for better life opportunities, right? However, they spoke to us only in Korean, so we understand everything, but we also, you know, respond in English. And it was kind of a mutually beneficial situation because, like, for example, my mom, right? She, you know, when she was first in America, my mom's around like 68 now. So, what's my mom? She was born in the 50s. 50s, 60s? Yeah, 55, I think. When she first went to America, she was so afraid that Americans would judge her English as being poor. And therefore, she used me and my sister as kind of like, you know, practice her English. And so, you know, I would, you know, me and my sister would speak to each other in English, speak to my mom in English. But then my mom would speak to me, us kind of in Konglish, like a little bit of Korean, a little bit of English. But all things considered, a lot of people's motivation for study languages and stuff, I think the sadness is, it's more about shame allayment rather than maybe personal interest, I suppose. So actually, one of the great things about learning Vietnamese is like learning my pidgin, you know, Uber, Grab, taxi Vietnamese, right? Oh, pro tip. If you want to actually get better at a foreign language, just ride solo in a foreign country with a taxi driver, Uber, whatever, and just try to learn the local language is like the best way to learn. But anyways, I have zero shame when speaking Vietnamese, and I speak Vietnamese so confidently, even though I totally mess up all the tones and the words and stuff like that. Why is that? Because I am not Vietnamese, you know, by blood, and therefore I don't have any sort of shame notions attached to my identity. Whereas, you know, even now, truth be told, like whenever I speak Korean, I'm always like self-conscious because certainly I'm gonna pronounce things like an American because I was born in the States, right? And actually, it's nice. Like a lot of Koreans, you know, here in the village are like, wow, you're born in America, but you speak Korean so well. And so I think also I need to consider that more, where I should be proud of the fact that I speak or understand any Korean, given the fact that I was born and raised in the States. Hi, Mungmi. Okay. So, oh, another pro tip is, if you want to make your videos more personal, touch this stuff. Yeah. Yep. Do. I wish I could lift up this rock. Very big. Yeah. Put some random crap on my hand. Anyways, and so, yeah, I think it's really important to unlearn shame, to de-shamify yourself, and have the courage to speak confidently. No, like, actually, the funny thing was with quote-unquote fluency, you will actually appear as more fluent and comprehensible if actually you speak confidently with all your grammatical and pronunciation mistakes fluidly, rather than always trying to think, oh, you know, am I going to be doing the proper grammar? So for example, the problem a lot of Koreans who want to learn English is that they're too nerdy about it. They try to be 100% perfect with the pronunciation, vocabulary, whatever. But it's hilarious because it's like, it doesn't really matter. Like, what's the most important thing is to be able to communicate and be understood by the other party, whether you're UCA'd correctly or incorrectly. And even if you think about it, like at the upper echelons of American society or the UK or whatever scholarship, right? So many scholars and super academic intelligent people, everyone talks a little bit differently. Like there's even a lot of academics in the States, right? At big prestigious Ivy League schools. You know, they grew up in the South, right? So when they speak with like a super Southern accent or from Texas or whatever, right? Unfortunately, the hidden bias is that they're seen as a little bit more backwards or unintelligent because they have an accent, but then again also this kind of bias and this, you know, regionalism, racism comes even in South Korea. So for example, you know, I am Korean American, I was born in the States, but my mom's actually from Busan. So we speak a special dialect called Gyeongsangdo Saturi. And so for example, proper Seoul city Korean would be, oh, 너는 뭐해? Like, what are you doing, right? But in Gyeongsangdo Busan Saturi, which all the gangsters talk in the gangster films, right? Is, shout out to my friend Josh, Josh White, is, 야, 너는 뭐하노? So instead of saying 너는, you say 니는. And even I've actually realized this is a hilarity, is that I'm actually really bad in Korean to pronounce the word, right? The line vowel thing. It's because my family is actually from that region. So, and then also the intonation of my, like even my Busan Samchon, who's hilarious, right? My Busan uncle is like, Ya Sangmina, ni mohano? Ni bam mogono? So it's kind of like this, like twingy, up swings, down swings, whatever. To me, it's much more fun and hilarious. And you know, the bias is that if you speak with this Gyeongsangdo, like kind of countryside accent, people gonna look at you, be like, you're a little bit less intelligent than like proper city Seoul folks who speak the quote-unquote standardized Korean. But also, this is something to consider, is even in Vietnam, there's this bias too, right? Like, you know, got Northern Vietnam, got Southern Vietnam, you got the Middle Vietnam. So, technically, the Hanoi Northern Vietnamese accent is proper. So for example, you're supposed to say, right? De la yi, like what is this thing, right? But then people in the south in Saigon, Ho Chi Minh City, will say de la zi. They'll say zi instead of yi. Technically, yi is proper. Zi is kind of more of like the New York City slang, whatever. And then there's people from Hue, who is like the center of the country, who is by either northerners or southerners seen as totally unintelligible. It's like, imagine if you're, you know, from California, Hollywood, perfect English, and then you go to like, I don't know, like, you know, the UK, you go to, you know, you go, let's say you go to Ireland, you go to Dublin, you go to, you know, Manchester, like somewhere where they speak English a little bit quote-unquote differently, you will probably find them quite unintelligible. Or like, you know, you go to like super deep Brooklyn, right? It's like the way people talk is like, or like even being on the East Coast in Providence, Rhode Island, being near to Boston, it's like, hey Joey, check out this guy. You want a cup of coffee? Kind of like talking like that. So all peoples speak differently, and I think that's what makes things interesting. So even rappers, right? Jay Electronica, Jay-Z, Kanye, etc., right? The reason why their raps are so great is essentially poetry. You could kind of, you know, transform and kind of fuck with the English language. So you could even say, like, even Eminem said something like, you know, some old interview from the 90s, see on YouTube, is like, you know, people think that you can't rhyme the word orange, so you don't say orange, you say orange, oranges, syringes, bridges, and you kind of twist and turn the words and you kind of morph them in different ways. This is why I think that poetry is so fun. It's kind of infinite, is that you take, you like, I forget who said it, it's like, if I was stuck in a desert island, it was one book I would take, is the dictionary, the thesaurus, because there's like a trillion words you could kind of play with and consider. So like even one of my favorite rap lyrics lines from best friend Jay-Z is like, on the contrary, I packed the Mac Millie. The on the contrary, on the contrary, Mac Millie is like a little machine gun, right? Or like Kanye, right? Is like, I promise I'm so self-conscious, you won't see me outside with at least one of my watches. Conscious, watch it. Like, you could kind of slur the words together, and actually it becomes much more artistic. Even our best friend, the rapper Future, right? Me and Cindy were actually considering naming Seneca Future instead. Is that the whole kind of like mumbling rap, it's seen as bad taste. I think it's a great innovation because it teaches you that, in fact, language is fluid, And actually, maybe it's not even the words themselves which are important, but it's rather the gist or the feeling or the mood, right? So like even a lot of new Kanye's Donda 2 album, I think it's co-produced with Future. Kanye's doing a lot more of the mumbling rap too, and I think it's super innovative to harness any sort of technique and use it in your favor is going to be very advantageous to your creative spirit. So for example, even in the context, well, check out this video. In the context of photography, etc., the more you can kind of fuck with tradition and you kind of mess around with it, the better. Wow. Okay. Google Air Kim Hadong, Hadong, Creative Photography Workshop. Yo, this place is lit AF. AF stands for as that four-letter word. Okay. Wow. Look at this. Man, I love it here in Hadong. I wanna. It's funny, like, part of me, I'm like, I wish I could live here forever, but at the same time, nobody should live nowhere forever. I think the joy in life is kind of this range of all these different experiences. But certainly, I feel much more creative here in the mountains. Even one of the best ways to be creative and to stream your creative thoughts is, you know, take along a GoPro, turn off the front LCD, and turn off the blinking LEDs. Ultra wide mode, 1080p, 24fps. Just point it towards yourself and just talk whatever rando stuff comes to your mind. The reason why I think that nature, biophilia, the love of biological things, stimulates so many creative thoughts is that when you could see deep depth, like things really far away, and you could just see details and rando stuff, like look at the fractal patterns here. There's like 10 quadrillion ways that you could look at this way. It stimulates our mind. Also, superficially here on the ground, I want to make sure not to step on any spiky, you know, stuff. So as a consequence, I'm more connected to the ground and, you know, it's better for your mind. But anyways, so yeah, I think creatively speaking, if you want to become more creative, think more creative thoughts, essentially avoid flat areas or flat lands. Even it's funny, like people like the beach, right? We went to Busan the other weekend. The flatness of the beach is not actually really stimulating for creative thoughts. It's far superior to be here in the mountain. Like, actually, my idea would be, you know, to buy some sort of house in Crestline or Lake Arrowhead or something like that, or just Airbnb it every once in a while. Home ownership is for suckers. And whenever you kind of need to stimulate some further creative thoughts, come to some sort of mountainside area, where you could be super quiet with the trees and you could just kind of stream your thoughts much more. Like, even the problem is when I'm in the city walking around other people, I become a lot more self-conscious with my thoughts because, you know, I'm afraid of people overhearing. Oh, look at this view. Overhearing me and stuff like that. So, being connected to nature is good insofar much as not nature is beautiful for the sake of nature, is that it's just like insanely in like variegated, like walking around, right? Imagine if each pebble was worth a dollar, you would have like 100 quadrillion different dollars. Like, this is Seneca's dream because he loves, you know, picking up rocks and throwing them into bodies of water. Also, the fun thing with elevation is, with elevation, it's kind of like life becomes more like a video game. Like, imagine like a Ocarina in Time, Legend of Zelda kind of video game. And so any world in life where you could do kind of more of this stuff, kind of the better. So essentially, takeaway points is, you know, give a middle finger to the tradition, become less respectful, and have the courage and the freedom to just kind of play around with social norms and share your thoughts with others.